The following show is closed caption for the reality impaired. The Jerry Bader Show.
...906, to the surprise of, I'm sure, virtually no one, Green Bay is not on the short list of cities that will host the NFL draft in 2015. Many of you, especially those of you who listen on WTAQ in Green Bay, know that I have been very critical of the Green Bay mayor for his opposition to a downtown Walmart. I, however, applauded Jim Schmidt for this effort. I knew it was the longest of long shots, but I liked it anyway. I did. I don't think Green Bay has the infrastructure to pull this off. I don't think Green Bay, Fox Valley, and the surrounding region have the infrastructure to do what needs to be done for that. I just don't. By the way, the finalists are New York, Chicago, and Los Angeles. Los Angeles is interesting in that, by the way, New York is where it's currently held, but there's obviously another venue being considered. LA is interesting because they don't have an NFL team. How much longer is the NFL going to allow that to happen? Now, the number two television market in what is now almost entirely a TV product, NFL football. How much longer are they going to allow that to go on? That they don't have a team. And other cities have acquired teams in the time, in the nearly, you know, it's almost 20 years now? It's almost 20 years now that you have the number two TV market without a team. But it could host the draft, the 2015 draft. I know that there are those who mocked and ridiculed Schmidt, Mayor Schmidt, and I've done enough criticizing of him on other issues. You know what? Ask and you get, don't and you won't. I have no problem with him dreaming big. That's the one thing I don't have to criticize about him. I have no problem with that at all. But there are just obvious logistical issues with the town. It was never going to happen. But, well, I shouldn't say never. I suppose if somehow they could have made a pitch. Apparently, the romantic part of it, the Packers history part of it, just wasn't enough to sway them. You do have the Resch Center. Those of you not familiar, all that familiar with the Green Bay area. You have the Resch Center, and that was the idea, the Resch Center and Lambeau itself. I actually think it could have worked. But there are just, I think, too many hurdles to clear. The logistical issues of the actual event, the logistical issues of hotel rooms, and on. I don't know that weather would have been that much of a consideration, but early spring, you never know what you're going to get in Green Bay. It's a possibility, but that's true in New York, too. I knew it wasn't really a possibility, but I do applaud the effort nonetheless. Today, I think, is an extremely important anniversary. Obviously, it's leading newscast throughout the morning. There was an event in Madison today. Obviously, in France, dignitaries are assembled to mark what you could argue, is the most important day of the 20th century. Now, there are 100 years and 365 days in each year of the 20th century. So that's a bold statement. But in terms of the course of history, it is hard to imagine a greater day than June 6, 1944, D-Day, the Normandy invasion. As Winston Churchill put it, not the beginning of the end, but the end of the beginning. Turning point in World War II. The much-anticipated Allied invasion of Nazi-occupied France. If you were going to come up with contenders for a more important day in the 20th century, I suppose you could say that the detonation of an atomic bomb in wartime, because that set the stage for the Cold War, which immediately followed World War II. I mean, that changed the world. Using an atomic device, not once but twice, within the span of a week against Japan, did change the world. I think that's fair. I think landing on the moon at the time, Jason, seemed like it, but it's become an incredibly unimportant day because we're not even, the United States doesn't even do manned space travel right now. At the moment, it seemed that way. Now, there's another thing, though. Is that the most historic day of the 20th century, July 20th, 1969? It might be, but is it the most important? We are marking 70 years of freedom today. That wouldn't have happened, very possibly, was the D-Day invasion not successful. The planning, the sacrifice made by the men involved, and everything else. The United States, until recently, has been the leader of the free world for 70 years because of that day. The shape of the Cold War, that the United States would be the leader of the free world, that when global freedom is threatened, until recently, the United States is there. Now, I've got a few things to say. And then if anybody wants to comment, and you know what, I don't want to be negative about this, but I also have to be intellectually honest in terms of where we are today and where we were then. You can argue that the United States fiddled as Europe fell. In fact, England nearly fell, and we did nothing. It wasn't until we were attacked, and not by Hitler, but by the Japanese, on December 7th, 1941, that we decided, okay, this is our problem. And then we were immediately involved in both theaters of the war, Europe and the Pacific. Yes, perhaps we should have gotten involved more quickly than we did. But when we did, if you just say the start of 1942, by 1944, we were leading the Allied invasion of occupied France. That was the moment, and this is why I think it's the most important moment of the 20th century. One of the reasons is when the United States became the leader of the free world. Yesterday, I read a piece from Dan Henninger where he said the problem with our foreign policy today is it doesn't stand for anything. And I said, if you had to come up with the mission statement of the Obama foreign policy, sadly, it's we're not in charge. We're not in charge. The world doesn't turn to us and say, what are you going to do? And in fact, well, the Obama administration foreign policy has been self-flagellating. It's been, well, we're going to make up for the sins of President Bush and the way he ticked off all our allies. You know, the reality is our actions in World War II weren't necessarily hailed after the war. I can't find it, and I spent the morning trying to Google it. I read a piece once that was written by a French journalist after World War II, which called the cure worse than the disease. That the Allied invasion and everything else left Europe in tatters and... Really? So you would still rather be occupied by Hitler in the spring of 1946 when that piece was written? So our friends have always resented the fact that they needed our help. And I said during the Bush years, that's what was going on. Remember, FDR is looked at as a liberal patron saint. And yet he is stronger on defense, or as strong on national defense, as any president of the 20th or 21st centuries. And I have played this in the past. I want you to think about this. Would an American president do this today? This is the next morning. President Franklin Delano Roosevelt addressing a national audience on radio, which is how you did it back then, on the invasion of the Allied invasion of occupied France. If you're not familiar with this, I don't want to tell you what it is. We're not going to play the whole thing. It's about 6 minutes long. I want you to listen to some of this. Jason, go ahead.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
My fellow Americans, last night when I spoke with you about the fall of Rome, I knew at that moment the troops of the United States and our allies were crossing the channel in another and greater operation. It has come to pass with success thus far. And so, in this poignant hour, I ask you to join with me in prayer. Almighty God, our sons, pride of our nation, this day have set upon a mighty endeavor, a struggle to preserve our republic, our religion, and our civilization, and to set free a suffering humanity. Lead them straight and true. Give strength to their arms, stoutness to their hearts, steadfastness in their faith. They will need thy blessings. Their road will be long and hard. For the enemy is strong. He may hurl back our forces. Success may not come with rushing speed, but we shall return again and again. And we know that by thy grace and by the righteousness of our cause, our sons will triumph. They will be sore tried by night and by day without rest, until the victory is won. The darkness will be rent by noise and flame. Men's souls will be shaken with the violences of war. For these men are lately drawn from the ways of peace. They fight not for the lust of conquest. They fight to end conquest. They fight to liberate. They fight to let justice arise and tolerance and goodwill among all thy people. They yearn but for the end of battle, for their return to the haven of home. Some will never return. Embrace these, Father, and receive them, thy heroic servants, into thy kingdom.
And he goes on. I don't want to play the whole thing, just in the interest of time. Imagine the President of the United States in 2014 leading the nation in prayer. Sadly, it is hard to imagine. And talks about how noble the cause is. Righteousness, in fact, is the word that he uses. Puts a lump in your throat, doesn't it? I mean, it's really powerful stuff. As is a lot of stuff that I've been reading online today. In fact, the Sheboygan Press on their website has the front page of the Sheboygan Press from the day after the D-Day invasion. And over the masthead, over the paper's masthead, it has the headline, "Nation Kneels in Prayer." Because that's what we did back then. And nobody questioned that our cause was just. And I do want to celebrate the memory of those who either gave all on that day or those who did come home and their contribution to that day and the days after until Hitler was vanquished. But here's the big difference between then and now. We knew what our purpose was. Vietnam changed that. Vietnam, and even before it, Korea. They weren't considered just wars. They weren't considered noble wars. And as a result of that, the left doesn't consider any war anymore worth fighting. And I want to compare and contrast FDR and his leadership in World War II with what President Obama just did in the Bergdahl-Taliban exchange. Think of where we were 70 years ago. We were unified as a country. Even the media, quite frankly, cheered for the Allies. There was no moral equivocating. There was no, well, you know, they're just people too. We were going to not defeat, we were going to destroy the Japanese imperialism. We were going to destroy Hitler and the Third Reich. We were going to destroy the enemy. So, loyal listener who comments often, and his comments are always appreciated, he shared this morning. Just a thought for today, D-Day 70 years ago, my father was in the first wave at Omaha Beach, went out with 33 of his brothers in arms, 28 were killed. He spent his day trying to fight and save who he could. He himself lost his hearing and was shell-shocked. That's, of course, what they called it back then. His hearing returned after the fighting. He stayed in the Army and retired as Sergeant Major. He fought in Korea, and Nam, and retired after being shot out of a chopper in Nam. He passed away 5 years ago. He never talked much about the fighting and what he had to do. When he did talk, he always talked about the ones who did not make it home, called those brave men heroes. Just a thought, maybe during the show today, you could honor those who paid the price of freedom by dying. And playing taps. Jason, that's not a bad idea. Maybe at some point before the end of the show. Yeah, I know, we do. Yeah, go ahead. Break. I got carried away on this. We'll take calls after the news. 406-1360, 888-455-1360. It's 924.
The Jerry Bader Show.